You are listening to the Photo Bomb Podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photo Bomb Podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me as always is Gary Hughes.
And I could not be more excited to be here. Literally, could not be more excited.
And figuratively.
Both of those things at the same time. Yes, that's true.
Why are you so literally excited to be here on a Sunday? It's a Sunday morning we're recording this. If you're watching us live, it's, of course, you know what day it is, or not. And then if you're listening to the podcast, we recorded this on Sunday morning.
Yes, I am literally and figuratively excited to be here. We have a lot of, we got little kids at the house. And so like,
it's, you do.
Yeah, two. So two, and sometimes three, because my wife, my lovely sainted wife, watches our niece Lily, who is also about a year old. So from a couple times a week, so the house can be can be chaotic, and so it's like, oh, I gotta go to work. Sorry, I mean, it's tough, but I gotta go hang out at the studio in absolute quiet by myself.
I feel like you and I both have WTF wives, you know, that at a party, people are would look at us in a group and be like, WTF, you know?
Yeah, yeah,
why
no.
Are, why are those women true. With those men?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true for many, many reasons. But, you know, that's it is kind of a cliche, though, to look at another guy and feel that way. You know, you see it all the time. But does a woman ever get that? Does a woman ever get like that?
It's how a good question.
How did you land that guy, you old hag?
It's a good question. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm trying to think if there's ever been a relationship where you've been like, you know, wow. You know, he's something, and she... No, come on. You've known relationships where the woman was like, dude, she's a pill. I can't go... You know, I can't be near her. He's okay.
Oh, yeah,
she's
yeah.
a pill. So,
totally.
I've known this. So, you've known
but
that.
But is it for different but reasons?
It's not, yeah, but yes, it's not that he's so awesome. It's that she's so awful.
Yeah, it's usually not like, how did she land that? It's normally like, how does he put up with that?
Exactly. Whereas in our case, it's a little bit of both.
Yeah,
absolutely. A little bit of how do they put up with that, and a little bit of they're just so awesome. So
they get
the double. You know, but you're right, because guys just generally speaking are just not great. So it's very rare that you meet a couple where you go, he is just awesome. He's so great. I love that guy. No, we're awful.
Not
human
some,
beings.
But mostly not. Most those guys are mostly single, because if you're that awesome, stay single, for God's sake. Stay single if you're that rotten.
Rather than have it ruined.
Yeah, if you got that much going for you, man, just stay single as long as you can.
Awful.
You'll be fine.
That's awful.
Like, it's a trap. No, anyway, I'm just kidding. We're both happily married to wonderful women, and we're punching above our weight big time.
Yes, I did a bar mitzvah yesterday, and you know, so many times they will have the guy at the bar mitzvah that is doing what do you call airbrush, you know. Mm-hmm. And this guy was a Star Wars themed party, so he was doing Star Wars airbrushing, and it was really good. It was like he would put like a giant like a Chewbacca on your shirt, but it was like a baby Chewbacca. You know, or like everything was just a little cartoony, you know. So it was like here, cartoony BB-8, cartoony Chewbacca. It was like think about Muppet Babies. It was like the
I was
Muppet
just
Baby version.
Say Muppet Babies.
Yeah. It was like the Muppet Baby version of Star Wars characters. And
so is baby
and it was
Chewbacca
really cool.
Is that Fozzie Bear?
Is that what?
Is it Fozzie Bear, Baby Chewbacca?
Yeah, it was kind of, yeah, there you go. You know, I mean, it wasn't like full on, but it was just a little bit, enough to where it was kind of comical and really detailed. Normally, it's just like, you know, with these things, it's just like, you know, they put your name, Robert, and here's some Starburst
or
whatever.
Normally, airbrushing is like at a kiosk in the mall or on the side of the van of a guy who can't let the 80s go.
No, this guy was doing like, you know, full on, like, here's full length Chewbacca, you know, and he had a big line, and the line was still there at the end of the night because it was taking him a while to do each one because they were really, really good. And I couldn't come up with an excuse to get one. Or ask for one, because he was so busy.
Because you'd have had to push some 13-year-old
kid
out of the
you know,
way.
And like, he's busy, and you don't want to go, hey, I know you got 20 on tap here you got to do, but if you could just do one for me, that'd be
great.
No,
you just go like this. You just go, I was actually alive when this came out. Yes. Get out of my way.
I actually said that to somebody. I saw this in the theater.
Yeah, I saw this movie when it came out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, just got back from Vegas.
Oh, hey, yeah, WPPI. What was that like?
Yeah. So, it turns out that I'm bad at gambling still.
Yes, well, most people are. I don't know if you know, but that's pretty much the idea.
Yeah, so I lost about $90 in about 5 minutes on blackjack, and then I said, you know what, I'm not going to spend another $90. I'm just going to take myself out to a nice meal, And so okay. I did that several times instead. So here's what I realized. The only time I've ever really been good at gambling is when I was just with you and I was putting my money wherever you put, putting my bets wherever you put your bets.
Yeah, but even then you still, you got lucky. You have to get lucky because the odds are against you.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this because you walk in, we were staying at the Luxor, the convention was at Mandalay Bay, and these are massive, massive properties. And you don't walk into the Mandalay Bay, everything's gilded and beautiful, and the ceilings are 80 feet high, and, you know, it's got 1,500 rooms, and you don't go around and look at that and go, yeah, I guess a lot of people are really winning here. You know?
Yeah, a lot of people are making money, robbing
they
them.
Didn't. Yeah, this must be so profitable for all of the people who come in here to gamble. Like, they don't build something like that without, you know, taking almost everybody's money completely.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, there's a house edge, depending on what you're playing. You know,
yeah,
I like the slot machines tell you what the edge is. You can look online; they'll tell you. Like the slot machines, this place they act like it's a good thing. They'll say it's 98%, meaning we give back 98% of the money that we take in. And people are like, well, that's good. 98% gets given back. Well, no. I mean, that means over time, if you give them $1,000, they're going to keep 100 of it. You know, that's the way. And there, I mean, and you can't, the slot machines cannot be beat. It is, there's no, I mean, they are electronic devices programmed to keep 2% of the money that they take in, period. So it's like a lottery. They take in all the money from everybody and then they give some of it back to some other people, but they keep 2% for the schools. You know,
yeah, it's for the kids
and the gilded ceiling.
Yeah.
So that's the way that, and every house game has a percentage and you have to know the, and so you know which ones are the best and which ones are the worst. And the one you played with me was craps, which is actually, if you play it right, the house percentage isn't that bad, but it's still bad. They're all bad.
There's not a good game in there. And you know what sucks is I sat down at a blackjack table. I'm like, I know how to play blackjack. I win at blackjack. Yeah. Like 48% of the time, I can sit down, and if I have a little bit of luck, I can walk away with an extra couple of bucks, no big deal. So I go in to play blackjack, and then twice in a row, I got nailed on this, and I didn't realize when I sat down what this was, because I didn't know what was going on. The table's called a 22 push, which basically means that if the dealer hits 22, they still win.
Oh my God.
But you
That's
have
a
the
huge
option.
Advantage.
It's huge. Yeah, I didn't even realize it's on the table, like on a little placard. This table is a 22 push. So it basically means, like, you know how like you normally do a 48% of blackjack? Well, this is going to make it like 3%.
Well, here's your gambling advice to everyone going to play table games in Las Vegas. Anything on the table that is new or not normal. Like, you know, if you're playing blackjack, but there's also a little thing now, you can bet a side bet. And if you get 20, you get an extra payoff. And if you get two queens, you get an extra payoff. Oh, okay, those are called proposition bets. They don't put those on the table. They don't add those to the game because they're in your favor.
No.
So any change at all to the game over just normal straight up blackjack is just more money in their pocket. That's why they add them to the game. They're just, you know, now you go and you play a game and there'll be just a ton of stuff all over. It's like a craps table. There's this thing, which is if you get 20, you get extra money. And if you get this, you get extra money. And people, I'll just put a dollar on it. And by the end of the night, you've put $300 on it and that's gone.
Yeah.
So your best bet is to avoid that stuff.
So
the strip is tough, though. The strip has got really bad odds. The strip, that's how they make all that money. If you want the decent odds, you have to go downtown and play with the
Ellis Island Casino.
Someplace like that, right, where the locals play. Because they're really competing for the local dollars, and the local people know how to play. So the little small places like, what's that place called?
Ellis Island Casino.
Ellis Island Casino, this little hole in the wall. That's my favorite place in Vegas. Next to the Super 8. With one craps table and the best chicken fried chicken I have ever eaten in my life.
Oh, so good. Yeah. Hey, Christopher Arnold just wrote in. He said, I usually end up in the casino where Randy Quaid took Chevy Chase. He's talking about Vegas Vacation.
Which one is that?
That Vegas Vacation, yeah.
Right, but which casino is that?
I don't know, but I don't know that if you've ever seen that movie, if you're a fan of this series, if you can ever go to Vegas and not think about that. Although it was definitely not one of the better ones. Probably Christmas is the most, is the best one, best remembered of the series.
Probably, but I got to go with the standard very first vacation as because it was so unexpected, you know.
Yeah, no.
So little things in that movie I love, like when he wrecks the car by jumping it in the desert, it flies and everything flies off, and he's sitting there with Russ,
and Russ goes,
Dad, you must have jumped the car 50 feet. And he goes, nothing to be proud of, Russ. And then he kind of turns around and goes, 50 feet. You know, which is the way I am. Like, you know, when my daughter says something really sarcastic back to me, And I'm like, hey, don't talk to me that way. And I'm thinking, that was pretty good. That was actually.
Yeah. Like you got him, honey. You got daddy.
That was nice. Good job. That was good. We're broadcasting live on Facebook. We should mention, I mentioned it before, that we are broadcasting live on Facebook. And as we, and we're dressed up and groomed for the Facebook Live.
I got pants on.
This is the number one reason for not doing Facebook Live, is that now, as it used to be on Sunday morning, I would get up and put on whatever I had worn Saturday and do the podcast. Now, I have to actually put on a shirt and look nice for you.
Because people see you. Yeah, yeah, that's the difference. Yeah.
Well, so, I mean, look nice but is subjective.
You know, people love the video, so I think we'll just go with it for a little while, see how it goes. But
I've been doing so many of these things now. I'm just doing video all the time, and my wife is doing them all the time. And do you think that this is social media? I mean, we've been saying for a while that this is the big thing in social media, video, video, video. But I mean, do you think it's going to hold? Do you think that we're finally moving into a culture like you see in the movies 20 years ago where everything was video, where if you called someone, you video called them? You know, that because in the future, everyone video calls everyone. Right.
Right.
It's always, you know, the Jetsons. No one just talks to anyone. They always video call. And yet when we got video calling, we still were like, video calling was only for a special occasion. You still just kind of called or texted. But do you think we're going to move to that point where?
Well, I think that right now, even myself, I text and FaceTime before I'll actually get. The only people I talk on the phone to are my dad.
Right.
And my younger brother, who's kind of like a little anti-technology. But other than that, if I'm talking to somebody, I'm either texting them or FaceTiming with them. And I video chat and I text more than I use a traditional like phone call. And that's already I do that.
I don't do it. I don't do it with my phone much. But if I'm at my desk, then I like to. I'll use what do you call Skype.
I think somebody is worth talking to in real time. It's worth having a look at them. You know, like otherwise, if it's not worth talking to in real time, a text will do almost anything.
It's funny that we have the two extremes though, that we're leaving out the middle ground, which is talking without seeing, in favor of the two extremes, which is I see you and I talk to you, and the other extreme, which is I'm on the toilet and I'm texting you and I don't want to see you.
See, and, I was just going to say, the audio call is for the toilet. If you have to talk to somebody, but you also happen to be on the toilet, here's the thing. You're stuck on the toilet because what you don't want is you don't want them to hear the flush.
You can't do the flush. But what you do, you have to mute. What you do is you have to go, oh, hang on a second. Mute, wipe flush, get up, and then once you're out there, go, okay, yeah, that was the dog came in. Or
you're a genius, Boo Ray Perry.
Yeah. That's, we have
how
a mute
have
button.
I not thought to just
you
mute
have to
the
hit
call.
The mute button, dude. If I'm ever talking to you on the phone and I say, hang on a second, and then there's a mute, that's it. That's that's the flush, brother.
Hang on a second means I'm flushing the toilet.
Yes, because otherwise I wouldn't mute you. I would just go, hang on, and I would talk to whoever's in the room. If somebody came in the room and I had to have, I'd say, hang on. But if I say, hang on, and then I mute you, that's because there's nothing else in my life that's so secret that I would have to keep it from you. You know what I mean? That I
please hold. That I mute. Boo Ray Perry's office. Please hold.
Please hold. Boo Ray has to flush.
You know, I thought about just moving my office into the bathroom. And that'd just save a lot of time.
That'd be awesome.
Working with no pants on. Mm. So I did just get back from WPPI. It's only my second time going.
Yeah. And you spoke and you
I judged.
You said something to me. You said that your program sold out. Do they?
Yes.
Do you actually pay by the program at WPPI, or is that just an expression?
Well, a lot of other conferences, because I grew up in the PPA affiliate world, and they're a platform based conferences most of the time. So you pay one fee, and then you have access to all of the platform classes. But WPPI, SWPP, and a few other conferences, they have the platform stuff, but they also have what they call master classes, which is basically you can pay additionally to go to a small classroom setting with 30 to 50 people or whatever it is. It depends on the size of the room when they sell it out or whatever. And then you can take these smaller classes, and I think it ranges in price or whatever, but you can pay extra to go to extra classes beyond just what's on the platform. And it's pretty interesting. It's a model that I'm not used to. But I taught a master class at WPPI this year, which was basically a small group. I think about 50. They sold it out at 50 people.
Okay. What was your master class about?
Did my headshot gig, man. Did the old the old headshot class, the business of headshots. It was went over real well. It's do you do this when every time I give a program, I immediately open up the keynote as soon as I'm by myself, and then I change a bunch of stuff.
like right before you go on, or
no, after, like, okay, this joke didn't land, or this slide felt that like it was in the wrong order, or whatever. I'm constantly changing the program. Yeah. Yeah. So if I give a program a year later and I give the same program, it's almost a different program.
Yeah,
than the one I gave you before.
Yeah, because you'll be giving it, and you'll say something. Something will pop into your head when you're giving it, and you'll say that, and that'll go over well. And you'll think to yourself, okay, stick a pin in that. That needs to be something I do every time.
And you know what I do very often is somebody in the audience will say something. I'll be like, that's really smart. I'm adding that to my program.
Someone will ask you a question, and you're like, oh, geez, that's a great question. And I need to just work that into the program. That's my goal is to fix it, to have a program where no one has any questions. Because you've answered every question they could possibly think of.
They're just blown away with their mouth hanging open.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what you want to do.
Yeah, I got to the end of that program one time a couple years ago, and somebody goes, because it's a business program, and somebody raises their hand, and then I go, okay, what's up? Thinking that I'm just the best instructor in the world, and I go, hey, Gary, that's all great and everything, but where do you get your clients from? I was like, well, that's probably fairly poignant.
Yeah, I think a lot of us, you know, we want to learn how to shoot the headshots, but we'd also like to know where the hell to get the people who pay for the headshots.
Yeah, that's probably something that I should consider adding into my programs.
Yeah. Hey, well, I just completely lost that.
I've got something. I'm ready to go.
I had a point there attached to what you were just saying.
Just hold on.
I personally don't like to talk too much about marketing because I don't feel I'm really good at it. You know, whereas, like, as a photographer, I'm not really good at that either, but I feel more comfortable talking about it.
That was the thing I would think about you is that you're better probably than most of the photographers I know at marketing, but it doesn't necessarily mean you make a program out of it. But for you to think that you're not, I think you're doing kind of a lot of things right, you know.
In my marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I started a new Facebook group.
I was just going to ask you about that.
Called Take Better Pics.
With
and it's not for professionals, so it's probably not for the people who are listening right now. So take a nap and come back when I'm done. It's for everyday people, you know, and for everyone taking pictures with their cell phones or their point and shooter. Maybe they have a DSLR and they know nothing. They don't know the rule of thirds. They don't understand cropping. They don't understand find the light. They don't understand natural light. They don't understand anything. And I'm like, I'm going to start a group where every week I'm going to make a video and I'm just going to talk about one of these things and try and teach these things. And this is my contribution to try and just raise the level of photography in general on social media. And my goal is this. If I can just get 100 people to stop taking vertical pictures of groups of six with their phone, I will have achieved my goal. That's all if I can just get to where there's 100 people out there who realize they can turn the phone and they don't have to take that long vertical picture of a group of six where half the picture below the feet is nothing and half the bit below and they're all squinched in, you know, squinched is my word of the day.
Squinched.
And, you know, if I can just get them to turn the friggin' phone, I'll be happy. And I started and I was like, okay, I'm going to push this out, advertise it, you know, get people in it. And then I thought about halfway through the week, I thought, oh, you know, I should really be pushing this out locally more than anything else. Because if I can get local people into the group, then this more establishes my bona fides as the guy that you want to call when you do want a family portrait or when you know someone who has a bar mitzvah or whatever.
I was waiting for you to take a break so that I could jump on that like a cat on a mouse.
I actually bought such good content. Yeah, I started promoting posts and I was just promoting them to North America. And I'm like, no. I'm going to promote them to the Tampa area.
Yeah. If you could get 1,000 people in the Tampa area in your group who are people, that means what you've got there is you've got 1,000 people who appreciate and pay attention to photography.
Yes.
And you get to put your work in front of all the time.
Those are the people that you want. And you become,
these are potential clients, all of them. You know, like that's
already,
already
the group is populated, has a lot of like former brides in it. You know, my former brides and stuff are in there because they appreciate the good photography and they would like to be able to be a little better at it themselves. And what you want to do is get the ones who are not brides yet.
And then when
they decide to get married,
not only that, but they're thinking of you the whole time. They're associating you with photography, and anytime that topic comes up with anybody else. So think about it this way. Let's say that you are primarily a pet photographer. And if you're a pet photographer, wouldn't it be smart for you to start a group for pet lovers in your area? If you're in like, let's say, Cincinnati, and you call it, like, Cincinnati Pet Lovers, and then you started this whole group with, like, with meetups, and, you know, this is where to buy the best dog food, and here's a consumer report on this, and, like, the best place to buy your dog socks, and stupid stuff like that. For people who love their pets, and you don't have to push your business through it, but occasionally pepper in there some great photos and stuff of you with your dogs, and do some charity fundraising events, and you creating a tribe of people who are so obsessed with their pets that they're willing to spend time in a Facebook group about how much they love their pets. And if you're a pet photographer, don't you think that's your client base?
Yeah.
Don't you think? Yeah. I mean, it's Facebook groups are phenomenal. And not only that, but I don't know about you. I've seen in my feed, my Facebook feed is like 50% groups now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's groups. All groups.
Well, I was surprised at how many groups I was in. I didn't realize it. I go look at my groups. I'm like, holy crap. I'm in like 35 groups. Why am I in all these groups?
And that might be even a fairly low number considering the average. But you could, it's basically the groups are a way to sort of whittle down the best way, in my opinion, to whittle down Facebook into the stuff that you're actually interested in.
Right.
You know what I mean? And right. And it also is the advantage that Facebook has over every social media platform is the ability to have a group and to start a group. It's great. Right. It's a great lead generator for your business. And I think that's I was just thinking, like, not only could you become an authority and create a following for anything else you wanted to do by building a list from the people that follow Take Better Picks. But if you built a great following locally in your area too, you are engaging your potential client base. That's, I think,
well, it's grassroots marketing. It's the very definition of grassroots marketing, which is know as many people as you can and have them all know you as an expert at something.
Right. Yeah. Establish yourself as that subject matter expert.
I don't know,
my
though. I
mean, favorite words.
I don't know if it's going to go. I don't know if it's going to, you know, work because you need a lot. I want a lot of people in there, you know, and we're over a little over 500 in the first week. So I think, you know, so I tried a little average. I tried a little post boosting and didn't see much return on that. I'm really curious to see how that would work, you know, and made a little video thing to do to advertise it and kind of stuff, you know. So I'm kind of also using it as just a learning process on what works and what doesn't. I could also ask you. You have more experience with this than I do. That would work too. But you know.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. When I started, my Facebook group is called Garage Brand Live. It's marketing and business. And there's probably listeners in the podcast and viewers who are part of it. And what I did at first was probably the wrong way to do it. I got a lot of people in the group at first. You know, and I was running contests and doing giveaways and telling people whoever added the most friends. And I got a lot of people in my Facebook group really, really fast. But what happened was is I was getting very low engagement compared to the amount of people that were in the group because people were getting added to the group and having no idea what it was because they were just added by a friend. And so what happened in, we hit 3,000 people in the group in the first couple of weeks. And then it's taken, I started the group in December and it is now March. And I've probably had a turnover of about half of that. 1,500 people drop out to build 1,500 people back up who are engaged in the group. Okay. And so now my engagement is going higher, but the actual number of people in my group we're just past 3,500 in another couple of months. But now I've got engaged people in the group. And so it's better to have 500 people who actually want to be there than to have 5,000 people and most of them just turn off the notifications for the group. The numbers themselves, that's the lie that people tell themselves about social media is that you need to have the biggest number. And it's just like in business, it's not how much money you bill, it's how much money you keep. It's not how much money you bring into the business, it's how much of that you get to keep. And the Facebook group and any social media is the same. It's not about how many followers you have, it's about how much engagement you have with those followers. So if you go and you see another photographer who's got 20,000 followers on Instagram and you might have 1,000, and then you look at how many likes and comments they're getting on their posts, they might be getting the same amount as you are, which means you've got a much higher engagement with your 1,000 people than they do with their 10,000 people.
Right.
So it's about building a quality audience in Facebook group instead of building a high number. And if your content is good, the number will get there because people will just get added. And that's, you know, and so we've been trying to build quality content and engagement in the group. And more people are posting, more people are commenting. And they just added a couple weeks ago, probably a month ago, I just got the ability to schedule posts in my Facebook group. Which is amazing. Usually you weren't able to do that until maybe a month or two ago to post stuff in advance and schedule it. And so that means if you're running a Facebook group for potential clients or whoever, you're having to be on it every day coming up with content to post in there. And now you can just sit down on a Monday and post, schedule posts all week long, which is fantastic. Man, that has changed the way I'm able to engage with my group, which is awesome.
I've been using Adobe Spark a lot too.
Dude, my favorite thing in the world right now is Adobe Spark. It's so good.
I just sat down and made 10 quick hits of tips for better photography. You know, tip number 7, tip number 8, tip number 9, you know,
a little, a video?
Yeah. No, I did not. You can actually
produce a video like that with a slide and a picture and a slide and a picture with Adobe Spark.
Oh, well, there you go. That'll be on tap for Monday. So I made like 10 of those, and I post one in the group every day in the hopes that people will like them and share them. Oh, this is a good tip, and share them, and then maybe bring more people into the group. I don't know what I'm going to do with the group. I just kind of I kept thinking about it and wanting to do it and talking about it and thinking about it until finally Bobby was like, just do it, you know, just go ahead and do it, and then just throw yourself in. Because don't you find you have to do that sometimes?
Oh, absolutely.
You will procrastinate forever on stuff while you're trying to think exactly the right way to do this. Let me make sure I've got the right plan and the whole. How many times you meet somebody and that's what they keep, I've got to get the plan right. I got to get the plan right. And while they're getting the plan right, everybody else is passing them by.
Yes. Just do the thing.
Yeah.
Just do the thing. Like, you want to do it. You're thinking about it.
Yeah, just do it. Jump in the pool and you will swim.
You know? Nothing is perfect when it starts out. Look at Star Trek The Next Generation. That first season was terrible. But it got great eventually.
Deanna Troy with the hair up here and the stupid looking cat suit, and she could talk telepathically.
And she wore like something that looked like my grandma's couch.
Yes. You know, and Data smiled in the first episode.
Did he?
And never smiled again the entire series.
Poor Data.
Unless he was, you know, chip modified or something. But yes, and the very first time you see Data, he smiles in Star Trek The Next Generation. And we're off to the Star Trek trivia.
Steve Bennett just chimed in about using your phone. Tip 1, turn the phone on its side. Tip 2, no, seriously, turn it on its side.
I will go up to people like at a wedding, taking a group picture of the bride with somebody and doing that. And I just walk up and I grab their phone and just go, turn it. Just for the love of God, turn it.
Mommy, why is that man angry?
Why is he so angry? And we don't need a picture of their feet. You know, can you get in there? Let's see some faces. People want to see faces. And that's part of, too, what the group is about. It's not just take better pictures. Sure, it's about take better pictures. But it's also take better pictures for Facebook. Because everybody's posting everything on Facebook now. So let's try and just get some better pictures for Facebook and for Instagram.
Yeah, I've been trying to grow my Instagram following. Your tombstone is actually going to be landscape orientation.
Yes.
Here lies Bure Perry. Turn it on its damn side.
Rule of thirds, and for the love of God, keep the horizon straight.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I've been boosting my Facebook presence, too, because I've kind of been getting into more and more for my own enjoyment, kind of a, you know, street photography style, photojournalistic style of photography. Mm-hmm. I've gotten enjoying that more and more now. So I've started boosting, going back through my Facebook feed, and the pictures that I've shot that are along that style, like vacation pictures and stuff, I've started going into the comments and adding a boatload of tags to that. And like once a day, I'll just go in and do one of those. And I've probably picked up 20 followers in the last week just doing that.
That's pretty nice. That's a good tip, man. Good pro tip.
Yeah, you can recycle. Go back through. What you do is you, first of all, find a hashtag that you really like. Like I follow a hashtag called hashtag Fuji or hashtag, you know, for my little Fuji camera. And so now that's great. Now Instagram does that. You can follow a hashtag. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, dude, I follow headshots and several others. Awesome. Following a hashtag is excellent. Yeah.
And then you'll see a picture come up and it's like, oh, 650 likes. And you go, wow, 650 likes that pic that guy got. Look at his tags. Copy his tags. Save them someplace in your phone. And then go back to your old pictures. Comment. Drop those tags in and hit return. Those pictures will now recycle to the top of that tag list.
Whoa. So,
yes. And then later.
What I'm going to be doing today.
Yes. You can get a whole new set of tags and then go to that same picture later. Delete that comment. Add the new set of tags, bam, and now it goes to those tags. Dude. So you can take, because I think there's like a 20 tag limit or something maybe on Instagram. And you can also just edit the description and do that. But either way, just add the tags and it takes 2 seconds to do. And now you've just given a whole new life to your picture in the Instagram world.
Welcome to the social media hot tip line.
All your people who follow you have seen it, but now there's going to be 20 tags out there that are going to see it. And then tomorrow you can give it another 20, and tomorrow you can give it another 20, or whatever you want to do. If you're trying to get more people to follow you. The problem is now everyone who's following me are all these black and white street photography type of guys, which means now I'm like, oh, so now my Instagram feed, I can't just be posting stupid pictures because I need to be, you know. Another question. Should you have more than one Instagram feed? Should you have an Instagram feed for weddings and an Instagram feed for street photography and an Instagram feed for my family?
Only if you think you can manage it. I have one for my business, and then I have one personal one that's like a private account that's for my pictures of my kids and stuff. And we have that hooked up to an app called Chatbooks. And Chatbooks is basically what it does. It can take your Instagram feed, and every time you get a certain number of pictures, it'll print a little 5x5 album and send it to you. And so that's really cool. So it's how we keep pictures of our kids. I got a whole library of these little 5x5 and 8x8 printed books, and each one is a picture. So I have an Instagram that's just dedicated to pictures of my family, and I don't post that. That's not my business stuff. So I mean, but I can manage that. But most of us are like one person, two person businesses. I don't see us being able to manage four or five different Instagram accounts. It's a lot, man. I already spend a lot of time on social media, you know, trying to keep up with it. If you can manage it, if you can get your hands around it and do it well, it's better not to do a platform than to do it poorly.
I just noticed that most of the Instagram feeds that I see are very focused. And mine is not. It's like, here's a picture from a bar mitzvah. Here's a picture of me with breakfast with my kids. And here's a black and white street photography picture. And I think, if people want to follow you, you know, don't people tend to follow, like, you want to follow a guy who does headshots. You just want to see headshots. You don't want to see his family pictures. You don't want to see, you know, his, you know what I'm saying? So I wonder.
I do see a lot more specialized Instagram. Like, we used to be, it used to be a lot of behind the scenes of, like, our day-to-day life. And now I use stories for that, and the main Instagram feed is just basically finished photos. Because we don't post any finished photos on our Facebook page either. And so the Facebook page is all, like, pushing traffic to our blog, doing live videos, stuff like that. It's a little more of that, whereas our Instagram feed is finished images. And so we just have a different voice for each area rather than posting the same content in each one. And I found that our reach is broader. So, for example, if you use Instagram to post finished pictures from your clients, then you can on your Facebook page you can say, or Instagram you say, hey, for behind the scenes look of how we made this image, go to the Facebook page because I got pullback shots or whatever. You know, so you're incentivizing people to go to more than one place.
Okay.
And you're using the same content from a different angle to cover both social media platforms.
Yeah, I'm going to think about that because I thought about with the whole Fuji thing and that style of photography and black and white, I thought about, man, maybe I just want to have an extra feed that's just Fuji, just black and white, and that's just my fun indulgent feed, and it's not for marketing, that's just me for fun. And
well, then just keep, do it for you, yeah.
And then keep my main feed with, you know, but here's the thing, it's that sort of stuff gets more reaction than when I post a finished wedding picture. The only people who like a finished wedding picture typically are wedding photographers.
Yeah, other photographers.
Yeah. But if it's a picture of your family or if it's a picture that shows real life that's interesting just because it's a picture, you know, it's an interesting picture, then more people will like that. I don't know how important likes are either, but, you know, we live and die by the likes.
Yeah, well, it's engagement more than likes. Likes are even now considered a passive engagement by Facebook, for example. Like, it doesn't push it out as much. You really want comments. You really want stuff that's going to drive interaction, which is why the live video is so important. If you are watching the live video right now, throw a comment up there, like it, and share the video so that this will reach more people because it's those interactions that matter the most. So you can and it's even part of the algorithm now is the length of the comments. Isn't that crazy? Like if it's just if a comment that's just like nice or awesome doesn't get as much weight as, hey, that's a really great pick, blah, 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 what do you think about this? And then you And it's how many comments that comment gets in reply, and that's how you sort of start to snowball. You really want to create content that pushes active interaction rather than passive interaction.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I mean, I know you want the active interaction, but I didn't realize the length of the comments was a deal now.
Oh, yeah. That's factored in. I wouldn't say that it's the heaviest thing, but it's certainly factored in. Hey, I want to go to a story that we posted on the Facebook page this last week that got a lot of response from our viewers. This is the one about I posted the automated photo studio that does stills and video without a photographer. Did you see that one?
Yes, 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 I did.
Okay, so we had a lot of comments on it. And if you want to go, if you want to keep up, we post articles and interesting stuff right on the Facebook page all throughout the week, stuff that we're thinking about. Like, for example, there was a Josh Homme, who is the singer for Queens of the Stone Age, kicked a photographer in the face at a concert, like on purpose.
Yeah.
And so that was, you know, anything that's sort of vaguely photography related, we post on the page. And this one comes from Pop Photo, which is a popular photography magazine's website. And it's an automated photo studio for, and it's basically designed for more the catalog type of stuff. But it the whole thing operates without a photographer, using a touchscreen, and it's got the lights and everything built into it. So it's a pretty wild concept. And so I posted, does this scare the crap out of anyone? Because every career, everybody in their job is probably a little bit scared of a robot taking their job from them. And so I love the comments on some of these that I wanted to read out loud. Zach Thomas writes, it seems very specialized, so I don't see a lot of other applications. I saw a video 6 years ago where Peter Hurley was playing with a Red, which is a type of video camera, and acting like it could replace his process, and I don't think he's pulling stills from video yet. Thought that was interesting.
I read a story in Esquire probably, 3 or 4 years ago, where they shot a photo shoot with a model using a Red, and then just pulled stills for the magazine.
And how did it look?
It looked filmy. You know, the quality was good, but more like an old film quality, kind of a little bit. And their point was, you know, is this the future that you'll just put a video camera on the model, have them do whatever, and then pull a still? Somebody else did that just recently. Oh, I was talking to my wife, and we were talking about her LuLaRoe business, and talking about the women who have a huge following and do a lot of pictures of themselves. And she said it's like they have a professional photographer following them around. She said, but one of those women she knows for a fact shoots video of herself. She sets up the camera on a tripod, and then she shoots video of herself posing and moving around, and then she goes and grabs the stills and uses those as her Facebook marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it depends on the intended use. If it's for a Facebook picture, that's like, what, 1,200, 1,800 pixels at max it has to be?
Right.
So there's absolutely no reason you couldn't pull a still from a video. Could you make a billboard out of it? Hell no. But, you know, so it's definitely, that is a thing, but I'm not worried about this yet because it's a lack of creativity.
Why couldn't you make a video? Because, I mean, you say, well, a thousand megapixel on a side image from a still is small. It's not as big as a 4,000 from a camera. But if you're going up something as big as a billboard, relatively speaking, is that size that big of a difference? I've never really thought about it too much, but I've never fully understood how it is you blow a picture up for a billboard that, you know, and its native resolution is 8x10, and they put it on a billboard, and you're like, how did they get it to where it looks so good? But yes, I know why, and the reason is it doesn't look so good. If you were standing on the billboard,
yeah, because you're
like
a thousand feet away from
because
it,
because you're so far away from it. Right, relatively speaking, it's pretty small. All right, okay.
And there's also, for print is another thing too, that the pixels per inch, like so, and press printing is pretty brutal on photos. So if you have a photo's resolution isn't up to snuff, by the time you print printed a million times in an issue of Vanity Fair, it's going to look pretty crappy, right, translating to that medium. Mark Ogilvy writes, it's scary for photographers, but it's another step in the trend of technology replacing professionals. It's happening in so many other industries too. We have to adapt to the rapid changes. I think that's something that we do have to consider. I know you and I've talked about that's sort of something that's very scary for you, having been in an industry that sort of tanked before you came into photography.
Yes. You've got to be, what's that? There's in there a book about Who Moved My Cheese?
Yeah. It's like the Kevin Newsom recommended.
Who Moved My Cheese? You know what we have to talk about? If we ended this podcast without talking about this, I'd be like, how did we not talk about this? How did we not talk about the new Canon flash?
Okay, I posted that video. I knew we were going to get to it today. So
We've got to talk about the new Canon flash. The Robo flash.
Yeah.
Now, if you haven't seen this, it's been popping up a lot of news this week. Canon has developed a new flash that is just like their other flashes. The head moves around in every direction, but this one is robotic and moves itself. Now, here's what it can do from what I've seen.
It uses artificial intelligence.
Artificial intelligence. Who doesn't? And here's what it can do from what I've seen. First of all, if you point it in a direction, it will stay pointed in that direction. So if you switch the camera from vertical to horizontal, the flash will rearticulate to still point at the same surface that you had it pointing at, which is insane. But also, first I'm gonna say what it can do, and then I'm gonna say here's why I'm not gonna have one. So that's number one. And number two is it uses lasers, freaking lasers, Gary,
freaking lasers.
It uses lasers in full auto mode to figure out the best exposure on your subject based on the bounce and then bounce in the correct place. But, but from what I've seen, it only does that bouncing straight up. I do not think that it will laser your subject and then rotate around and bounce at a 45 degree angle over your left shoulder automatically.
Why not?
I don't think it's not designed to do that. It's designed to bounce up. So it lasers them, and then I guess what it's really doing is it's pre-flashing them a little bit straight on to get the exposure, to figure out what the exposure is. Then it goes up, pre-flashes up there, or lasers up there to find out to get it right, and then you shoot it. But I still think it's only a straight up bounce. I don't think that it knows, you know, oh, I want to bounce. Because think about it. It would have to laser you, then it would have to go left to 45, right to 45, up to 45, over your shoulder. It would have to bounce off, you know, so many different areas of the plane, so many different angles to find the right one that you'd be standing there for 5 minutes while it figured out which, you know, because it doesn't know where the walls are. So it's got to bounce. It would have to spin a complete circle and find the right wall for that picture. Also, it doesn't know what kind of light you want. Do you want a big, even flat light, or do you want something more dramatic that comes from the side more?
I'm going to go ahead and go on a limb here, and I'm going to say that it probably sucks on batteries.
That's the other thing, too. I got to believe it sucks the batteries down like crazy.
But, you know, this is a typical example of Canon taking a major step forward with the flat. Their speed lights have always been ahead of the game.
Huge first step. Huge first step. And there may come a time where you turn it on and it spins in a circle and goes and reads the whole room like in Batman, you know, and it gives you a sonar of the entire room and figures out what's the best bounce surface from this location to give you, you know, to give you Rembrandt lighting. And you'll be able to program it, but you'll be speaking to
it.
You'll just say, give me Rembrandt.
There's no reason why it could not be programmed to do that.
Spin around, find the best surface to give you Rembrandt lighting and shoot it for you. That may come. But right now... And the other thing where you point it in a direction and it stays pointed that way, that's nice, but I don't find myself shooting in the people who are using bounce flash are not shooting in the same spot for very long.
Well, it depends on the way you would need to do. You want to shoot a couple horizontal and then you switch over to vertical and it and the flash will adjust with you, because I know I've done that a lot. Like I'm switching the head mount. You don't have to do that anymore. Or you're switching horizontal and vertical and the flash stays pointed at the ceiling no matter how you use it. And I think that that's going to be pretty. That could be pretty useful in certain circumstances.
Right. Really, well, the thing with it, if you know, so I'm. But I was just thinking about like last night. Okay, yesterday when I was working at Bar Mitzvah, the number of times when I was taking a picture using bounce flash at an event, which is where you would want to use this sort of thing the most, the number of times where I was shooting vertical and horizontal was pretty rare. Usually it's you're just taking a group picture or whatever, and then you're moving on.
I would find that if I shoot a wedding or an event, 90% of my pictures are going to be landscape.
Yeah.
I need to crop vertical, I can. It's not that big a deal, and it saves me time just to shoot everything landscape.
I mean, because when they even show people using it, it's always like, oh, you know, you're using bounce flash to shoot this model. Most people aren't shooting a model with bounce flash. If you're working with a model or you're working with a senior portrait or whatever, most of the time you're going to be using off-camera lighting. Usually, I think most of your bounce flashers are your event photographers, your run-and-gun guys. And they use bounce flash because it's just inconvenient to carry a big, you know, strobe on a pole with you everywhere you go around the wedding. So that's where I think it's kind of, it's cool, but it's kind of, right now anyway, I won't be getting it. And again, I'm still waiting. Let's talk about the battery life.
Yeah.
You got to carry a car battery on your hip, I guarantee you.
I'd love to see some of those built-in interchangeable lithium ion batteries coming up. That's got to be the future.
I can't believe they're not doing that. Godox is the only one doing it. And yesterday I shot an entire Bar Mitzvah and never changed the batteries. And I can't believe that no one else is doing it.
I think that as far as battery, that's pushing the industry forward, because nobody wants to carry around 400 AA batteries to shoot a wedding or an event.
And it adds weight to your case. You know, I didn't realize until I took my batteries, my AAs out of my case, how much weight it added to my case.
Yeah.
They're heavy. And should I say this out loud?
Okay.
I almost want to maybe switch to mirrorless.
What?
Switch to mirrorless. Just go to switch. Go ahead and make the switch to mirrorless. Because my camera's big and heavy. It's really big and hairy.
It's big and hairy?
It's big and hairy and heavy. It's so big and heavy. And then when I go on vacation or I go to see my friends or whatever, and I carry my small Fuji mirrorless with me, and I think, I would love to be working with this instead of working with this giant brick that I'm carrying around. And for the love of God, Canon, will you please come out with your full-frame mirrorless? Please.
I'm telling you, buddy.
I've got $7,000 in Canon glass.
They're not incentivized to beat everybody to the punch on something like that, because it's very likely that...
And Nikon, too.
Yeah. Nikon doesn't have one either. And I think that they make enough products. They are a big enough company, Canon specifically. I think if they come out with one, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that when they come out with one, that it will be the best one. Remember how when the 5D Mark II came out, it leveled the industry and it changed cinema. It was the first full frame camera to offer 1080p video, and it changed everything instantly. And every once in a while, I think that Canon's one of those companies that they come out with respectable upgrades, and just every once in a while they hit you with a whopper, like with the speed lights puttering along, and then they come out with the radio controlled ones, which were better than anything anybody had at the time.
Right.
And then, you know, I think that that's the sort of strategy they have. And so my feeling is, I think when they come out with one, it's going to be fairly game changing. But we'll see how that goes.
I'm waiting. It's supposed to happen this year. I am just anxiously, please, I want that full frame mirrorless to come out. And then I want to be I want to be right in line, first adopter, buy that sucker. You know, hopefully it will still hold all my lenses, unless they come out with if they make it crop, then it won't hold my, then we're screwed, because it won't take the wide angle. Because if you want to get wide angle or crop, you have to have a special deal. But if they can just come out with it, because on my Mark III, I'm ready to upgrade. I'm really ready to upgrade. And I want to go to something. So many, being able to see the exposure live in camera, being able to have a tilting. Last night, I'm holding the camera over my head, shooting the Hora, and I'm thinking, how great would it be if I had a tilting screen so that I wouldn't have to be shooting it and just, you know, hoping. If I could just tilt that screen down when I hold it over my head, how great would that be?
It's awesome.
You know, and you've got that the screen on your M5 tilts, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah, and they just came out with an M50, which is basically, it's $200 cheaper than the M5. The screen articulates more.
Yeah.
It's got 4K video. It's basically a better version of the same camera.
For
$200 cheaper.
$200 less.
I'm so angry. And I had just went to, when I was in London, I just filmed a bunch of stuff for like a product review. And I'm like, well, I just tossed that in the garbage now. Like, I want the M50 now. Bruce Press commented on your comment, Bure, says, full frame mirrorless will not reduce your weight very much. Plus, as you pointed out, you'd still be hauling huge glass.
Yes, he's right. That it won't reduce your weight very much because the glass is where most of the weight is. So I get that. But articulating screen, being able to see the exposure in real time, being able to look in the viewfinder, bring up your menu system, and see your menu system. Whereas this is big for anyone who's getting older or needs reading glasses or any kind of glasses. This is huge for me because I can't see the back of my camera. I have to use my Hoodman loop, because I can't read anything on the back of my camera without reading glasses or my Hoodman loop. But on a electronic viewfinder camera, you've got the diopter built into the eyepiece, and so all you have to do is just look through the eyepiece, and you can see everything fine in there that way. But with Canon, you can see all you can see when you look through there is you can see, you know, what your exposure level, and you can see what your ISO and stuff like that is. But what you can't see is like, oh, I want to change to the size of my files, or I want to change the white balance, or you can't see that stuff.
I always want to change the size of my files.
I've always wanted to change the size of my file. My wife would just like to do that as well.
If I could just have bigger files, you know, I think that would solve a lot of problems for me.
Fantastic. Gary comes in with a joke save because Bure is rambling on.
Well, what else is new?
All right. Hey, we're almost done, aren't we? What time is it? Gosh, we've been going for a while.
We've put a good long show into it.
There's one other thing.
This is our show. We can go as long as we freaking want.
There's no story, but I thought it was cool, and I wanted to mention it before we were too far out. Did you see how they marked the photographers who shot the Olympics, how they knew you were a photographer?
No.
It wasn't just a badge around your neck.
Did they give you an ear tag?
No. A sleeve. If you look at the photographers at the Olympics, there'll be a row of them. All of them have green left sleeves.
Huh.
If you were a photographer, you had a sleeve that went over your arm, your left arm, and it was a green sleeve, like just a sock or whatever, that went over your left arm. And so all the photographers, their left arm had a green sleeve on it.
I got to believe that there's somebody with a YouTube channel that went in and just chroma keyed out them all and put in robot arms. Yeah. There's got to be some, like, remember when the Queen of England wore that chroma key green dress and people went nuts on the internet, like, right, photoshopping stuff onto it?
Yeah, but that's what, but they just all, so you see a row of photographers at the Olympics and it's just green sleeves. So every one of them has, their left sleeve is green with some writing on it that says, you know, official photographer. I found out about it because I read a blog post by a guy who lost his green sleeve at the Olympics and was in a panic to try and get a new one before, because he had to go shoot an event. And I'm like, green sleeve? And so then I looked and sure enough, here's, every photographer had a green left arm.
That's, I was going to sing a line from the song. I just can't remember how Green Sleeves goes.
Green Sleeves was all she wore. Anytime you go to a, if you go to a Renaissance festival, you're going to hear Green Sleeves.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
like the go-to Renaissance. Dun,
yep, dun, played dun, on a dun, pan dun, flute dun, by a man dun, who lives dun, with dun, his mother.
Yes. In a van.
Down by the river.
Down by the river.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I went to a Renaissance festival for the first time for my 30th birthday. This is like 6 or 7 years ago. And I got to tell you, it's not all kinds of folks, Bure.
No, it's a special type. It's a special breed of person at the Renaissance. My parents, we used to have a really great Renaissance here, and then they moved it, and they don't go anymore. But my parents used to go every year to the point where they started dressing for it. My parents. Mm-hmm. These are not D&D players. It was just, the thing is, though, if you dress Renaissance, not dress medieval, but dress Renaissance, it's like big baggy pants and a big baggy shirt and a floppy hat. It's the most comfortable thing in the world.
Well, doesn't your dad do that anyway?
Yeah, pretty much.
When he's working in the garden?
That's pretty much his outfit. So they would put that on and go to the Renaissance, and you take your own custom mug, and then you just drink beer all day. It's just an excuse to drink beer and walk around and watch, you know, silly shows all day. And who doesn't want to do that? Right?
And, you know, I'm okay not doing that.
You're okay
but I did,
not doing
I,
that?
I did learn to throw an axe, and I did get hammered on mead, which was pretty great.
The hammered on mead part is the big draw of the Renaissance Festival. Let me just tell you right now. That's really what it's about.
And after they had kicked everybody out, we kind of just stayed, and then the whole cast in costume gets under the big main tent, and they all have like a medieval nerd jam session where they're all and we just like kind of hung around, and it was just all the employees and all the characters and us. And nobody kicked us out, but again, drunk on mead, so it was pretty cool.
The coolest thing I saw was, not the coolest thing, but one of the things I thought was really cool was I saw a chorus, and it was probably 6 to 8 people, and they were singing a cappella and full harmony, and they were singing a song called Rio Rio Chia, which is a legitimate, like, I don't know, you know, crazy song from way back.
Would you sing a line of it, maybe?
Rio Rio Chia, la la la. It sounds like that. I don't know all the words, but I sang it in chorus in high school. It's a,
what language is
that? That's right. I don't know. It's like Italian or something. But it just goes like Rio Rio Chi and it goes on. And so they would do that. They would do it in chorus. Rio Rio da 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 da. This great harmony. And then they'd each break out with a solo. But the solo would be the solo would be like a song from a TV show sung to the same tune.
Okay, like the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in West Philadelphia, like, well, born and raised on the playground.
Now it's time to say goodbye to
all our family,
you know, to Ben and all his friends or whatever. And so like this guy would break out with, like, you know, it would be the theme from the Brady Bunch, but it would be sung in the exact same style to the exact same song. And he would break out with, like, you know, here's a story about da 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 da, and then they'd all come back in Rio Rio Chio, and I was like, well, that's just very clever. You know?
But it also sounds like the nerdiest thing that's ever happened on Earth.
But it was very clever, and they actually sang really well. And so it was. I was like, well, that's cool. Now, I don't want to drive around the country and live
that
in a van and
cool
be muddy and
you.
Dirty all the time in order to do that for an audience. No, I don't want to do that. And I have a good friend of mine, an old roommate of mine, who makes his living doing that. He is part of the Tortuga Twins, which are one of the big touring Renaissance groups. And he is my age and has been doing this his whole life. He tours the country every year and plays at Renaissance festivals.
That's a special kind of carny, isn't it? It really is.
It is.
Like a, yeah.
Much better than a regular carny. First of all,
is
more
it?
More likely to have all your fingers.
Is it?
Yes. Yeah.
Much more better. Likely to have fingers, less likely to have teeth.
Fewer felony convictions, fewer ankle bracelets.
Oh, that's right. You cannot be in a Renaissance fair. They only accept misdemeanors.
Yes.
Yes, more fingers. No felonies.
The carnies are missing a finger. You got to put those rides together, baby. There's gonna be
well, how else are they supposed to smoke their cigars? Just between, you need to lose one finger just because.
Those of you watching on Facebook are seeing the wonderful visual of Gary smoking a cigar as a three-fingered man.
I clearly smoke a lot of cigars.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That is fabulous. All right, we have to wrap this thing up.
Yeah, man, let's wrap it up.
You can see us online. You can find us in so many places now because we are just the social media mavens. Anywhere you go, you're going to find us. But you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/photobombpodcast. You can find Gary at HughesFioretti.com.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me at BooRayPerry.com. And what else? Oh, you can send us email, questions@photobombpodcast.com. Or you can just go to the Facebook page and just, you know, ask a question there because we'll get it there as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably the best place, I would say. Yeah, just interact with us on the Facebook page.
Who sends email?
Email. Like my grandpa?
Yeah.
My grandpa, he loves email.
Yeah, what are you doing?
He forwards me stuff all the time, like, you know, that I won the lottery in Nigeria. He's very excited about that. Yeah.
Okay. So that's it, then. And we will see you back here next week.
All right. See you later.